Welcome to Happy Hour with lawyer and TV personality Jonna Spilbor and author and inspirational speaker Carol Pesci. Happy Hour comes your way every Sunday morning at this time with life advice, real conversations, and awesome interviews with self-help heavy hitters, best-selling authors, celebrities, and more. Would you like to maybe live better, stress less, and laugh more? Then you've come to the right place.
Hello and welcome to Happy Hour here. It's Jonna Spilbor. It is Carol Pesci. It is Frankenberry, that guy. And we are finally back after a few weeks off over the holidays. So, ladies, it's nice to talk to you again.
Yeah, I missed my peeps.
I know. Well, I did keep in contact.
You did.
Yes, you did.
You kept in contact in our group text between the three of us with some of the absolutely fantastic hairdo ideas that you have for yourself.
Now, wait a minute, Frankenberry. That's not exactly how it happened.
What? These weren't ideas? These weren't hairdo ideas that you were considering?
Frankenberry just sensed that windup as she said what she was saying.
Yeah, I could. I should probably back off a little bit.
Well, now I'm very upset because the entire time that I was regaling you two over the last 2 weeks that we were on our summer vacation, I put vacation in air quotes because we take 2 weeks off, but I didn't do anything. Frankenberry, you didn't do nothing, did you? No.
No, actually, I was asked today if I take vacation time, and I said, no, I just take Mondays because I'm a single dude with no money and I got nowhere to go. So
right. And that's understandable. But we take a break in the summer because everybody else is taking a break. And I didn't want you guys to forget me or how I look these days. So I sent you random pictures of various people with mullet hairdos.
Okay.
Because that is what I am sporting at the moment.
Oh,
all right. You need give a little background for few people who don't listen every single week and might not realize what hair issue you have going
right,
on.
Right. You just said let people know where it was that we left off a couple of weeks ago.
Okay. Will do. So here's the deal. When we left off before our summer vacation, I was complaining about my hair, not about my hairdresser. I love my hairdresser, my hairstylist, the person who does my hair. But I have embarked on a, shall we say, hair journey where my hairstylist and I have discussed kind of shortening the length to reduce some of the damaged hair and to also fix the unique problem that is all mine and nobody else's in the 300 million people in the United States. I, your co-host and friend, am the only one who has one side of her head grow slower than the other side of her head. Yes.
Wow. We have to come up with a unique name for that there, Carol, that is all about Jonna.
Well, so here's what's interesting. She's saying that it's a growth issue, but last time we spoke, it was because her hair was breaking off on one side more than the other, I thought.
Because
you're burning it with a flat iron every day and
yes,
then
that's
curling
right.
it.
Yeah, because right. you would get up and you would notice your hair was too curly. And then what you would do is you would take that flat iron to flatten the hair out.
Burn it straight.
Exactly.
And then curl it.
Right. And then curl it again.
Right.
So, yeah.
And then go to your stylist and say, what's going on with my
hair?
That's
right. And be somehow confused as to the fact that you're damaging your hair.
Okay. Now that we got this straight.
Okay. Now that we're all up to speed, even though you two are completely wrong, I will say yes. Do I straighten my hair before I curl it and I use 450 degree hot tools to do it? Yes. That is correcto facto, but that still doesn't explain why one side either breaks off or grows more slowly than the other side. Hence, the hair journey I have embarked upon. Well, now that you're up to speed, the problem when you embark on a hair journey of this nature is that you naturally have to lose some of your length in order to get good hair. It's like, what is that thing that they taught us back in grade school. Like sometimes you got to burn down the whole crop before you can like replant seeds or some crap like that. You know what I'm talking about?
Carol and I are going to go. Yeah, we're going with it. Go ahead.
Okay. So because of that, and because of my very unique issue, me being the only one out of 300 million people in the United States who has this condition, I
very now it's a condition.
Yes.
That's right. Bonafide condition.
That's right. Jonalox. Do you suffer from Jonalox? You know, followed by a quick
video.
Oh,
my God. I can see the infomercial now.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, man. Here's something that will hold your head up so your hair won't touch your pillow at night.
We make fun, but I have had 28 consecutive horrible hair days since beginning this hair journey. Yes.
And you're still laughing.
Well, I have to laugh because if I don't laugh, I will cry.
Hey, that's right. That because also she's stronger than you and I, Carol.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
She is.
Yeah, all except for my hair. But so what happens is now my hair to me looks like a very strange mullet. But it's not just a mullet. It's not just a mullet. It's a shag and a mullet. So I coined the phrase shullet, shag, mullet, not realizing that shullet is already a term for a hairdo, just not my hairdo.
Which is so funny because you kept typing shullet and I'm like, here goes Jonna making up words again, which you do frequently, like when your hair was the color blorange. Which was blonde orange. And then I wanted, because, and so for the last 2 weeks, you keep sending Frankenberry and I awful hairdo pictures saying, you guys forget about me? Remember me? Still here. Miss me? And with these stupid, awful hairdos. So I'm like, I'm going to Google shullet. I don't know, to see if maybe I can find some stupid hair to send back. And shullet's actually already coined by somebody.
Which ticks me off because I was going to trademark it. I know.
I thought it stood for she mullet.
And that's what, yeah, right? When you Googled it, I didn't know that it stood for that. I thought it was, I made it a combination of a shag and a mullet.
Well, it might be. I'm just guessing it was she. That's what I thought it was, a she mullet.
That's what I would have assumed as well.
Oh, God. So for our listeners, our regular listeners, Jonna dials in every week for this as a different person, depending on whatever issues going on in her life. And would you like to share who you are today?
Of course. Today, I am Mrs. Brady, as in Carol Brady, as in during her shullet days on the Brady Bunch, which was every day. She had a shullet the entire series. And that is precisely what I look like. Yes. that is me.
I'm just glad that you cleared up you know, some of the Frankenberry confusion with that group text and those pictures, because again, like I said, I thought you were just, you know, sending us possibilities, things that you were interested in.
Oh, you thought just by happenstance I was sending you pictures of, let's see, Joan Jett, Leather Tuscadero, John Bon Jovi, Carol Brady, and some the guy from Napoleon Dynamite, and some other randos with shullet haircuts. Just cause, no. Frankenberry, have you met me?
I don't know.
There was a lion with a really bad haircut.
The lion was my favorite, as a matter of fact. But I don't know. I mean, hey, look, you know, things come back. Maybe you were just trying to be a trendsetter, and that's what your thought process was, you know, looking at all these new haircuts.
Funny you should mention things come back, because I have invested in. So when you're going, for anybody who might be soon to embark on a similar hair journey, you do, and you know, when you look at yourself every day and you go, every day you have this weird hair that you can't seem to fix, and you do all the Googling and you do all the researching, you're going to end up spending a lot of money in hair products that you've never used before, like hair glue, hair cement, hair fiberizer, all these things. Don't waste your time. This is what you need to spend your money on, because this is what I have done.
Extensions.
My hair is so short on the top that the extensions won't even work.
Oh my God.
Because I've got hair, Carol, that's like only 3 inches long.
Oh my That's God. Like,
I know.
You know what,
I know.
The only thing we're missing right now is being able to hear the gasps from our listening audience.
Oh God.
They'll be gasping. But here's one thing that's gotten me through the first month of this journey slightly is I invested in on the Amazon. I bought a bunch of bedazzled bobby pins, and I stick them in random parts of my hair.
So, did not.
I did, but here's why. Like, they don't make my hair look the style look any better, but if you stick them in randomly and they're bedazzled, then people are less inclined to like focus on your hair, and they're more inclined to focus on your mental state. Like, somebody's gonna look at me, and go, "Oh, look, she's just crazy. That's why her hair is like that. She's crazy."
And you know what? There you go. There's no longer a journey. You have solved the issue. Because I would do exactly that. I would actually probably, as I saw you coming, say we were walking down, say a corridor in an airport or something. If I saw you coming, I would very subtly move over a few
step aside.
Feet. Yes. Keep walking just to put a little distance between us. And that would be my first thought. My God, she's nuts. Thus the haircut. She probably did it herself without a mirror.
And Jenna, I feel for you here because... If Frankie Berry,
you never had a bad hair day in your life. I've known you your whole life.
Me or Carol?
Both.
No, we know you tried shaving your own hair, Frankie Berry. We know how that turned out.
That I tried what?
You tried cutting your hair. You shaved your head and you screwed it up.
There was a time
you screwed it up and you sent us a picture of the back of your head. And you had like a big strip.
Well, there was that. Spot. Yeah, I screwed it up, and that's when I had to go completely bald. To cover the bald spot.
No, yes. What I was going to say, Jonna, I truly do feel free because if Frank and Barry or I had a major hair issue, it really wouldn't affect us because we don't go out. We don't go anywhere. We don't see anybody. I would be like, my dog would be like, I don't care, Mom, what your hair looks like. It's fine.
Right.
But not you. You have to run a law office. You have to go to court. You have to go on national television.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
See.
So I do feel for you.
What would happen with me, Jonna, is if I did have a hair issue, but I did actually leave the house and go out in public, everybody would say, instead of looking at the bobby pins in my head, my God, he must be crazy. They would instead say, Frankenberry actually left the house, so we don't care what his hair looks like. It's just nice to see you.
It's exactly what they would say.
Yes.
100%.
Can I just add two important things, just as a PSA to other people who are going to embark on a similar hair journey? Can I just do that, please?
First, tell me the next time you're going to be on national television so I can turn it on and see what your hair actually looks like.
And that's so funny that, like, on a total serious, but as serious as this stupid, thing can be for me, I've had people reach out to me saying, you've been so quiet on social media. And part of the reason for that is, I've been doing a lot of TV. But I haven't posted it because I'm like, don't want anybody to tune in.
Despite the huge audience that's already there.
I don't want 3,000,001 people to tune in. And, 3 million is plenty. I'm not gonna post about it.
Exactly.
But what I have done is I've gone down a rabbit hole. And I started looking at old pictures of my old hair from a month ago and earlier. And then I like pictured myself going over this montage of my old hair while like a Sarah McLachlan song plays in the background.
Oh, Lord.
And then I
did the arms of an angel.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And then I try to like pour cold water in my face because I'm like, you are such an idiot. People have real problems. People are dying out there. And you're crying because you have a shullet. But then what happens? But then I'll go to my mother's, say, for dinner, and I'll be like, Mom, what am I going to do for the next 6 months until my hair grows another inch? What am I going to do? And then she'll say, oh, honey, I know it might not be, the cut that you want right now, but your hair is very, now wait for it. Here's the word she used.
Okay.
Your hair is very Stylish. Do you know who's very stylish? My Aunt Rose. She's 86. And my other Aunt Pearl cuts her hair. That's a stylish hairdo.
Oh, my God.
What am I going to do, guys?
Start wearing it up.
I don't know.
I don't have enough of it to wear up.
I'm thinking hats. I said hats a couple of weeks ago, but you don't want to go with any Mary Tyler Moore type hats where you might look kind of cute.
Well, anytime in life, like you're going through something right now, right? And you don't really have a choice about it. You just got to go through it. So you got to ask yourself, what would a mentally strong person do in a similar situation?
Now, I want you to know, when I edit this show down, I am going to put a small drum roll underneath that one, Carol, because it took you a while to get to it. But you could see it coming. You know what I mean? The audience knows it's coming.
You can feel it.
Yes. Just a little drum roll underneath. And the drum roll is going to get louder. And then there'll be a cymbal crash when you say, go ahead.
Yep.
It was, please. I heard those footsteps like I was on the Serengeti and there was a herd of lions 3 miles away. I heard that coming. Well, you just made my job easy because coming up after the break, it just so happens today of all days, we are going to be speaking with a fabulous author. She's the author of many, many books. She is a licensed clinical social worker. She's a TED Talkser.
TED Talkser.
She is going to speak to us about her book, which is entitled 13 Things Mentally Strong People Don't Do. Who is she? She is author Amy Marin. And I hope she's going to join us after the break, because I think I forgot to email her some important details about how to log into the show. Just kidding. She should be here.
Now, is one of those 13 things about being mentally strong enough, is that going to include not obsessing over your hair?
You know, we're going to have to ask her, because I am up to chapter 6, the sixth of the 13 things that mentally strong people don't do. And let me tell you, we'll save this for when she joins us after the break. This book starts out with a
whoa. You're not kidding. And I'm also going to say the title, chapter 1, they don't waste time feeling sorry for themselves. Okay, now we can go to break.
The raspberry sound, that is our cue. All right, we'll be right back with our guest here. It's Jonna Spillboard. It is Carol Pesci and myself. You're listening to Happy Hour, and we'll be right back, like I said, so please don't go around. Don't go away.
Sunday mornings with 92.9 WBPM means you'll laugh more and stress less. Now here's more Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol.
And welcome back to Happy Hour here with Jonna Spillboard and Carol Pesci and some dude. And it's time now to get to our guest for today. And we're going to be speaking with Amy Marin. And Jonna and Carol, both of you say that the first chapter of her book is just there you go. Yep. It's a wow.
It is.
It is a total wow. And before we get there, even though we've teased it, let me just tell you who we are speaking with today. We have with us author and licensed clinical social worker, Amy Marin. She's a college psychology instructor and psychotherapist. And put a pin in that, because I want to say something about that later as we're speaking with Amy. She's one of the most popular TEDx speakers of all time, and I'm sure you guys are going to agree in about 1 minute when we get to her. her talk, The Secret of Becoming Mentally Strong, has been viewed more than 22 million
times.
She's also the award-winning host of a podcast called Mentally Stronger with therapist Amy Marin. And we are talking to Amy today all about a book that I am loving, Carol, you are too, entitled 13 Things Mentally Strong People Don't Do. I happened upon this book at a time in my life where my mental strength has been tested with my mullet situation.
Show it situation.
So this is actually perfect timing. Amy Marin, welcome to Happy Hour.
Thank you so much for having me.
Jonna, I'm just going to hop in real quick, but I'm going to assume that most of Amy's book probably is about things that are a little bit more important.
a lot more
important than bad hair.
Yeah.
Frankie,
yeah.
Harry, come on.
More important than bad hair, which brings us to, okay, let's, you know, we teased this before the break too. So Amy, I'm so glad that you are joining us today. The book, we love the title of the book, right? Oftentimes the title is what catches our eyes. But when I started listening to your book, because I consume all my books via audio because I just love to do that. I was not ready for how the book started, which I'm assuming is kind of like the impetus for this book. So why don't you tell our listeners why we're all up about that? How does your book start? Tell us what the impetus for writing it was.
Well, it starts by explaining a little bit about my story of how the book came to be. I was a therapist and I thought, oh, I'm going to teach everybody all these things I learned in college about mental strength and mental health. But shortly after I started my career, my mom passed away suddenly and unexpectedly. She had a brain aneurysm. And then on the 3-year anniversary, 3 years to the day that my mom died, my 26-year-old husband died of a heart attack.
Oh, which is crazy.
That right? And so I find myself, I'm a widow, I'm 26, I don't have my mom. And like, it's the same time all my friends are just talking about getting married and having kids. And I have so many dreams and ideas of what life was going to look like. And I thought, this isn't fair. Like, there were so many things I wanted to do and so many amazing things my husband and I had planned to do together. And he was 26 when he died of a heart attack. Like, you're not supposed to have a heart attack at age 26. So it just sent me into this tailspin where it was no longer about teaching other people about mental strength. But I thought, goodness, I need to learn these things for myself. And it's time to really dig deep and figure out how do you get through really tough times in life and potentially grow from it too. I didn't want to stay stuck. And so, you know, most of my 20s were just miserable, to say the least, as this time of awful grieving. And then once things started to get better, kind of dug myself out of this hole of grief. And I thought, all right, what am I going to do now? And I got remarried and I thought, how lucky am I to have like this second chance at love? And it was around that time that my father-in-law was diagnosed with terminal cancer. And I just remember thinking like, you know, finally something good happened and life was looking good. Why do I have to go through another loss? And that was when I wrote myself a letter and it happened to be called 13 Things Mentally Strong People Don't Do. And I found it helpful. So I thought maybe it'll help somebody else. And so I put it online just basically in the exact same format as a letter I'd written myself, but it didn't have any context as to why I was writing it. But that list went viral and 50 million people read it. And I got a book deal. And that's why I still get to talk about it today. But I never intended to set out to write a book thinking I'm going to keep talking about mental strength. It was just the lessons I'd learned myself as a therapist and somebody who'd been through some hard times. And I'm glad it went viral and super glad I still get to talk about it. It's been 10 years now since I wrote that list, and now I get to be here talking to you about it.
Amy, you said you're just wow all the way around with your story, with your intelligence, with your perspective. And I hope people listening do buy your book and read it. You said something early on besides sharing in the first chapter what you went through. You wrote a line, I'm going to read it because it stopped me. Because people would say, you know, time heals all wounds. And you say, I knew that time doesn't heal anything. It's how we deal with that time that determines the speed at which we heal. That stopped me in my tracks. That line right there can be so helpful for people to wrap their head around.
Yeah, I think that's one of the biggest misconceptions people have is if you just wait, you'll start to feel better. But it doesn't work that way. I would have people come into my therapy office and say, it's been 10 years since I went through something tough, or it's been 2 decades since I lost somebody. I don't feel any better. How come? I went through all of this time just waiting. But it was because they didn't really do any of the work. They spent a decade or two escaping the pain and distracting themselves and doing anything they could to not feel bad. And then the cruel twist is if you don't work through the pain, then you never really heal from it.
Which is so true. And which is part of the reason why, and I know you mentioned that this book really came about 10 years ago, but it is so utterly relevant. Like, it's never going to be irrelevant, right? For sure. And one thing, before we move on to the other topics of the book, I wanted to say this. I told us we were going to put a pin in it. So I have never been through therapy. I'm a total fan. I think a lot of people get help from it. I'm not against it at all. Just for whatever reason, I haven't gone through therapy. But the way you've written the book, when you give examples about people that you actually did therapy with, that you were their therapist for, I kept saying to myself more than once, I'm like, wow, you know what? this therapy, like, I should probably do a little bit of this. Like, it inspired me. It really has it changed. I never was against therapy, but I actually have a more open outlook to it from listening to your book. I just thought that was a little weird sidebar for you.
Oh, I'm thrilled to hear that, because there are so many misconceptions about therapy, or it's really scary. We don't know what it is, and a lot of people don't talk about it. And when you see what therapy looks like in the movies or on TV, it's not always an accurate portrayal. So people are like scared to come in the first few times, or they're scared to make that first phone call, even when they know for a long time, like, hey, I could probably benefit from it, but I don't know what to expect. So I'm thrilled that you found that to be helpful.
Yeah, I thought it was extremely interesting. So I was also happy, as I'm going through the 13 things that mentally strong people don't do, I don't do some of those myself. So I'm happy that I'm kind of like on the right track. Because look, we all, crap is going to happen.
It sure is.
To us, right? And in your case, it was a lot, and it was a lot at once. And in other cases, it can be a little at once. It can be a lot over the course of a lifetime. And what do you think, how did you determine the order of the book? Or does the order not really matter? Like, is the first thing the most important thing not to do? Is the 13th thing the most important thing not to do? Like, how did you get it all together there?
Well, since I didn't actually intend to turn it into a book, the order is literally the list of things I needed in that order. So it starts out with not feeling sorry for yourself, because guess what? I was in the middle of not feeling sorry for myself. So since it was a letter to myself, and we kept the book very true to that original letter, that's why it's in that order. But if somebody's reading it and they say, you know, I really struggle with chapter 7, so I'm going to skip ahead to that, it works like that too. I think they're all pretty equal in terms of how damaging that they can be to us.
You created, so we'll go back to the letter. You created that letter in real time. Like, for example, did you say maybe after a month of losing your mom, did you say, well, okay, here are a couple things that I think are helping me, and then put the letter down, and then maybe a month later picked it back up? Like, how did you pull this stuff out of you?
So, you know, after I lost my mom, I really started paying attention to my therapy clients, because I wanted to know, I wanted to learn from them too. Like, all right, it's like I have a revolving door of case studies of people who have been through really hard things in life. What made some people more hopeful than others? And what made some people still want to strive to become better and do different things in life as compared to the people that felt stuck? So I started learning it really early on, but I'd never really made a list of it. And it wasn't until I needed the list that I wrote it. It was when my father-in-law was diagnosed with cancer, and doctors told us that he probably had a couple of months to live at most. And I remember just thinking, like, unlike when I lost my mom and my husband, it was sudden and unexpected. And not that there's a better or worse way to lose somebody, but in this case, I knew what was coming, and I thought, I can't do this one more time. But it wasn't like I had a choice. So it was in that moment that I sat down for the first time ever, put the 13 things in order in a letter to myself. And it was over the course of a few days that I would just wake up in the morning, I'd read that letter and say, okay, Amy, if nothing else, just don't do these things today and you'll get through it. And it was
Amy,
a few days,
oh, I'm
sorry, a few days after writing it that I decided to post it online.
Amy, I want to go back to something that, because the first way, John was asking what order, because the first one you say is to not feel sorry for yourself. But I want to pause there for a moment, because you make a very important point, because you also say being mentally strong is not about positive thinking. Thinking overly positive thoughts can be just as detrimental as thinking overly negative thoughts. So I want to pause for a moment and point that out. If somebody's newly going through something difficult, that it's important for them to allow themselves to process and feel those things and not think, oh no, I'm not allowed to feel sorry for myself. There's a time for that, right?
There is. I'm glad you brought that up, because there's a big difference between healthy sadness and self-pity.
Right, right.
And when you feel sorry for yourself, it involves like magnifying how bad things are. When you start thinking like, my life is worse than everybody else's, there's nothing that can ever be done, and you become helpless and hopeless, and you get stuck. But sadness and allowing yourself to grieve really helps you work through the pain, and it helps you honor something that you've lost in life. And so to make sure that we do allow ourselves to feel bad, we just don't want to get caught up in that cycle of self-pity where we're convinced that life will never, ever get any better.
So let the emotion be there. Allow yourself that, you know, don't, because I think when we feel down, and, you know, I think there is I love being positive, but there is something valid to toxic positivity. But if we think we're not supposed to feel sad, because that's what the rules say, we then put judgment on top of the negative emotion and it just festers.
Correct. And I see a lot of people who feel like they have to be happy all the time or pretend that they're not in any pain, or we're quick sometimes to say that to other people. Like when something happens, they don't get a promotion that they wanted. And somebody says like, oh, don't worry, something better will come along. No, you're like taking away that person's opportunity to be sad. It's okay to let them be disappointed for a while. You don't want to always just pretend like, no, it's okay. Great things are coming my way no matter what. No, it's okay. Sometimes life is hard and it's okay to be really sad.
And then there comes a point to then how do you know what, how does someone know between, okay, I need to give myself permission to feel sad, to process this emotion. And at what point am I at a point where I'm just stuck and feeling sorry for myself?
You know, sometimes we think emotions are either positive or negative. People will say like, well, anger and sadness and anxiety are negative emotions, but happiness and excitement are positive emotions.
Right.
But that's not really true. Like any emotion can be helpful or hurtful at any given moment. Like if you're really excited about a get rich quick scheme, you'll say yes to it. So that in that moment, excitement is not helpful to you. Or sadness is helpful when you're grieving something and you honor what you've lost. It's actually helpful. Or if somebody said, hey, go jump off a bridge, and your anxiety says, you know, that's a bad idea, your anxiety is helpful.
Thanks, anxiety.
Right. So I always encourage people, take a moment and say, is this hurtful or helpful to me right now? And if it's helpful, just allow it to continue. If it's hurtful, like if you're so sad you can't get out of bed and you can't go to work and you can't function anymore, we don't want you to stay stuck there. We say, okay, you need to change some things so that you can function. So it's really about examining in this moment in my life right now, is this thing helpful or hurtful? And if it's hurtful, there are tons of things you can do to switch how you're feeling. And sometimes it's about changing the way you think. Sometimes it's about changing the way you behave.
You do mention that, Amy, and that resonated with me, that sometimes I'm not going to say it as well as you do in the book, but your emotions influence your decisions. And I totally get, like, if, you know, you can make a bad decision if you're emotional, maybe having negative emotions about something else, it'll affect a decision of whether you're going to buy a house or take the job. Or in my case, I decided that I was going to chop half my hair off. Like, I probably should have taken a beat and waited till I felt emotionally maybe bad. Like, maybe I was feeling so good that day that I can rock a shullet. Go for it. and that's not the case at all. So
you're not you are rocking your shullet.
No,
I'm so proud of you.
Oh, but getting back to the more serious stuff, I do want to remind our listeners that I know, you know, this book, kind of the impetus, which you had so much devastating loss, but these principles on being mentally strong or not to do, they apply to a lot of, not just death. They can apply to so many different scenarios in our life. And I'm noticing in the different chapters, right? One of them is don't resent other people's success and they don't fear alone time. I think these are important in just like everyday life. Like,
navigating life, yeah.
Yeah, they really are. I didn't want to write a book that says, you know, let's just prepare ourselves for the next shoe to drop. Because I think it would be awful if we lived our lives saying, you know, I want to be mentally strong so I can deal with life's worst case scenarios. But it's really about even when life is good, like how do you live it to the fullest and how do you enjoy all of the great things in life too. And part of that is doing exactly those same things. Like, yeah, when somebody else is happy, how do you be happy for them so that you don't end up resenting their success just because they got promoted or they have something great going on in their lives? Or how do we take risks in a healthy way? So thank you for pointing that out. I do think there's a big difference between, say, mental strength and resilience, whereas resilience is about bouncing back from difficulties. I think mental strength is also about enjoying the good times in life too.
Yes. And being inspired by other, and sometimes even being inspired, and you mentioned this too, like being inspired by your own failure. Like you, when you discuss, and I forget the exact term, that some people have inner and outer. What is that phrase that you used? It's escaping me. But like, if you don't get the example you gave is somebody who doesn't get a job will say, well, you know what? Then I didn't really give it my all and I have to better hone my interview skills. That was like an inner, not mantra.
You're talking about locus of control, whether it's an internal or external?
Yeah. That's it. Yes. See, I was very close. I was very, very close.
Here's the story.
I know. But that's true. Like, I think it, what that said to me is, look, don't make excuses. Like, sometimes crappy things are going to happen and it might be your fault. Like, don't make excuses. Make yourself better.
Right. There's two ways to respond to things. So if somebody applies for a promotion and they don't get it, somebody with an extreme internal locus of control might say it's because I'm not good enough. Somebody on the opposite end of the spectrum with an extreme external sense of control might say, well, because my boss only picks favorites. But there's somewhere in the middle where we can say, how do I accept appropriate responsibility? Yeah, maybe I didn't prepare enough, or maybe I still have several more years to gain experience. However, I'm not in complete control of how other people behave either. So I can't control whether somebody picks me for the promotion, but I can control whether I focus on becoming the best version of myself. And when we focus on those things we have control over, life gets inherently better.
We always, always, always have control over how we choose to look at a situation and how we respond to it. And that's where our power is.
Absolutely. That you can't control other people. You can't control a lot of circumstances in life. But if you just wake up every day and say, okay, but I get to control my attitude and how I respond.
Yep.
We do have a fair amount of control over life.
You get to control how many bedazzled bobby pins you buy. That's important. I know. All right. So no, this is so freaking fantastic. I have not yet, but I am going to. I'm sure we can still get to your talk, The Secret of Becoming Mentally Strong, the one that's been viewed over 22 million times, probably 32 million times by now.
Yeah, right.
Yes, I link to it on my website, but it's also on YouTube.
Yeah, so that is awesome. So I don't want to, but I think we have to wrap up with you, Amy Marin, author of 13 Things Mentally Strong People Don't Do, and a fabulous TED Talkser, as I said before. And a licensed clinical social worker and psychologist and therapist. Now, can I ask you just before we do wrap up, you still do therapy with people, yes?
Yeah, most of my time these days is spent writing and podcasting, but we do occasionally see some people on the side for therapy as well.
Just so as for our listeners, like, what do you think of therapy? Like, because I know there are apps now where people don't even have to go face to face with a therapist. Are those good, bad? What do you think of like virtual therapy?
So it depends. Some people find it really helpful. Some people say, I probably wouldn't put in the time and the energy and the effort to go to a therapist's office, or it seems too intimidating, or I just have a small issue I want to text a therapist about to say, hey, is this normal? Or I'm struggling with this. Do you have any recommendations? But other people say, you know, this seems really impersonal and I want to see somebody face to face. So I think the apps can definitely open up a lot of opportunities for people who might not otherwise get face to face treatment, but it's not a one-size-fits-all solution for everyone. Some people certainly benefit more from seeing a therapist in person.
So, and you know what else? Everybody would benefit from starting off by buying the book and reading the book, 13
yes.
Things Mentally Strong.
I can't wait to finish it. Powerful.
I know. Me too. And then check out your talk. Amy Marin, you're such a wonderful find, and this is a wonderful book. I really, really appreciate you joining us today on the show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Wait, before you go, so if people do want to connect with you or see more about what you have or go to the link to your talk, is your website amymarin.com?
It's Amy Marin, LCSW is in licensed clinical social worker.com.
And it's M-O-R-I-N.
Yes.
Amy Marin, M-O-R-I-N.
I pronounced it completely wrong because there's a singer, Maren Morris, and for some reason, that's how I connected the two of you.
And that's so obvious.
I know. So completely. I'm just going to blame everything on the hair. Amy Morris, thank you for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Amy.
Thanks for having me.
Yes, thank you very much for joining us today, Amy. And we're not quite done yet here with Happy Hour. We still have segment number 3 on the way, so stick around for that. It's Jonas Spillmore. It's Carol Pesci. And well, it's me. come back for those two at least.
Live better and laugh harder. It's Sunday morning and Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol on 92.9 and 96.5 WBPM.
And welcome back one more time to Happy Hour here with Jonna Spillmore and Carol Pesci. Hello, ladies.
Hello, Frankenberry.
So it was very nice to talk to Amy Marin earlier and find out about that new book of hers, which I know has wowed you guys, as we mentioned.
Yeah, some powerful, powerful concepts in there. And what it's interesting, because I typically like to speak to the positive, not to the negative, like rather than saying, don't do this, do this. but she has approached it that way. Here's 13 things mentally strong people don't do, because it is eye-opening, as in chapter one, not feeling sorry for themselves after we spent 20 minutes with Jonna feeling sorry for herself about her hair, as an example.
Yes, good example.
But if you guys, I mean, think about this. It's so, well, first of all, it's so funny how, you know, sometimes when we're looking for guests, you know, I know what I do. Like, I'll be like, all right, who, what kind of topic haven't we really delved into or what have you? And I think I was looking for something else entirely. And her book popped up. And sometimes I just take that as fate. And I'm like, this is the one. We've got to talk to her. And so I'm so glad that she agreed to come on, because I'm not kidding. This stuff is never going to be irrelevant, no matter, you could be going through a pandemic, not a pandemic. You could be right. Financially healthy, not financially healthy. Like this, that's why, I mean, when you write an article or you write a letter to yourself called 13 Things Mentally Strong People Don't Do, and it goes viral, and you have a TED Talk with 22 million views.
Yeah.
People want to know how to be strong. And yeah. So I'm so glad that we jumped into this topic with her. And it really is a good book. It's easy and it's informative.
And she has over 8,000 reviews. What does that tell you? 4.5 stars. Yeah. But I mean, and as we were talking about when we were talking with her, is it's not only helpful if you're going through a major life challenge, but just to help you better navigate a good life, even when things are going okay, you know?
Yeah. So if anybody, it doesn't matter. Like, you don't even have to be going through something bad right now. You're going to enjoy this book and you're going to get something out of the book. And I promise you, even somebody like me who's going to enjoy
you're going to read the entire book just to try to see if you can figure out a way to direct each one of them to your hair. How does this apply to my hair?
My shullet. Yeah, no, this is so bad. Can I tell you? I'll just say this, and then I'll let it go. I promise.
No, you won't.
Yeah, I know. whatever, Spielberg.
I know, but like, you don't understand. Like, I want to. So, Jeannie and Carol and I have like mentioned in the past. Like, let's say we wanted to do a girls' trip to Carol's house, right? Let's say we wanted to go to the lake house or we wanted to go to the beach. I'm not going to be able to go now. For like the next 6 years, because that's how long it's going to take for my hair to grow the foot that I needed to grow for me to be happy again. I'm never going to be happy again. Am I?
No, I guess
chapter
not.
Chapter one. Self-pity is easily the most destructive of the non-pharmaceutical narcotics. It is addictive, gives momentary pleasure, and separates the victim from reality. What did you just say?
Yeah. Yeah, that about covers it there, Pesky.
Nothing. I didn't say nothing.
No, look, so I haven't read the whole book, but I have to, like, all kidding aside, you have a gift. Your problems are a gift to the rest of us, because you are very gifted in finding the humor. Like, you're still laughing at yourself. It's still frustrating for you, but you still make yourself laugh and you're making us laugh. So.
That's the spin you put on it. That's right. That is the spin you put on it. You know what? Jonna's got a glass half full of problems. There you go.
Yep. You're good, yes. You got a gift.
You.
All right. Well, when we come back next week, I'm sure Jonna will be wearing a baseball hat and crying.
Can you take us out to the Brady Bunch theme, Frankenberry?
But again, Amy Marin, thank you for joining us today.
Yes.
It was, definitely we'll have her back, as she does have other works that I know you guys are going to check out. And Happy Hour will return again next week, same time right here. So please join us again then. For Jonna Spielberg, for Carol Pesci, I am Frankenberry, and have yourselves a good week.
You've been listening to Happy Hour with Jonna Spielberg and Carol Pesci. If you missed last weekend's show or want to hear it again, visit the Happy Hour page at 929WBPM.com. There's more life advice, real conversation, and another awesome interview next Sunday morning at 8 a.m. Live better, stress less, and laugh more with Happy Hour on 92.9 and 96.5 WBPM.